The U.S. Supreme Court today re-examines the question of affirmative action in higher education. The issue is so important that for only the second time in its history, the High Court will release same-day audio of its two-hour argument. 25 years ago, the Court ruled that while colleges and universities may not set aside a specific number of seats for minorities, race may be a factor considered along with others, such as geography, special talents, and alumni parents. Over the last decade, conservative groups have challenged that system, both at the ballot box and in the courts. They say it represents an unconstitutional racial preference. NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
The stakes today are enormous. The outcome will affect the way students are selected not only at state universities, but at private colleges as well. It could affect mentoring programs, scholarship programs, even recruiting programs. And it will likely signal the court's views about affirmative action in employment. The case was brought by the Conservative Center for Justice on behalf of white students rejected by the University of Michigan.
We cannot treat people differently based on skin color, and the University of Michigan is doing exactly that.
Jennifer Gratz is one of the disappointed students. Gratz had her heart set on being a pre-med student at Michigan. With a 3.8% high school average and acceptable but not stellar boards, she certainly was among the pool of qualified applicants. So when she got the rejection letter, she was so shattered, she says, she gave up plans to become a doctor.
That letter did cause me to give up dreams.
I understand the disappointment, but we are still confronted with the fact that we have over 25,000 applications for 5,000 places.
University of Michigan President Mary Sue Coleman says there are many more qualified students than the university can accept. Coleman, like every other selective university president in the country, says that the admissions process is aimed at building a class of students with diverse backgrounds. At Michigan, the undergraduate selection system screens applicants initially using a point system. Of the maximum total of 150 points, 110 are allotted for academics. Of the remaining 40 possible points, 20 can be awarded for any one, but only one, of these factors: membership in an underrepresented minority group, attendance at an economically disadvantaged or predominantly minority high school, or being a recruited athlete. A wide variety of other factors add on more points: 10 points for Michigan residency, plus an additional 6 for being from an underrepresented Michigan county, up to 8 points for being the child of alumni, and 5 points for community service, personal achievement, or work experience. After the points are scored, the 20 admissions counselors evaluate each application, including essays and recommendations, and finally, a reviewing committee takes a last look. In contrast, there is no point system at the law school, where there are only 4,000 applicants, of whom some 350 will be admitted. There, the criteria are more flexible, with the school saying it puts a heavy emphasis on diversity of experience.
I'm in a sense of the quintessential diversity candidate, and it became very clear to me based on my application that they did not mean diversity, they meant race.
Barbara Gruder is the 48-year-old mother of two who's challenging the law school admission system. When she applied, she had her own small consulting firm in healthcare technology and hoped to benefit from the university's much-revered health law program.
I had both corporate and small business experience. I had references from vice presidents. I had lived in other countries. I was a mother. You know, I just had a real wealth of experience.
But Gruder, like Jennifer Gratz, was waitlisted and ultimately did not get in. Today, the university's lawyer, John Payton, will tell the justices that once the university has determined who among the applicants is qualified for admission, there's no doubt race does play a role in the final selection.
We do take race into account, and we're not denying that race doesn't make a difference for some of the students. It does. That's what it means to take race into account.
At the undergraduate level, the university concedes that it admits almost every qualified minority applicant. The reason, say university officials, is that the pool of qualified minority applicants is quite small in a state with relatively few minorities. At the law school, though, ranked 7th best in the country, the university says it rejects minority students at a higher rate than white students, and that it frequently accepts white students who have academic scores lower than black students who are rejected. At the same time, however, the record shows that the law school keeps a running daily tabulation of its admission numbers by race. The university says its goal is to have what it calls a critical mass of minorities. President Coleman:
having a critical mass doesn't mean that you've got a numerical target. It just means you've got enough people so that you don't have a single individual trying to represent the entire experience of that race or that ethnic background.
Well, critical mass is just another word for a quota.
Kirk Coble represents those challenging the university's affirmative action program.
What the university is saying is that they have to have a certain minimum number of students from certain racial groups.
The hard, cold fact of academic life today, though, is that there are not enough minorities applying to college and graduate school, and even fewer with the very highest academic credentials. The National Law School Admissions Council has compiled some stunning statistics on this score. Nationally, last year, there were a total of 4,461 law school applicants who had law boards and grades high enough to make the cutoff for the top 30 law schools. Of those, just 29 applicants were black and 114 Hispanic. The bottom line, the schools argue, is that without some consideration of race, many schools would return to the virtually all-white character that marked them 25 years ago. While that might not be true in states like Texas and California, where blacks, Hispanics, and other minorities are a majority of the state or close to it, it would be true in Michigan, where whites are 79% of the population and minorities are concentrated in the Detroit area. President Coleman.
Well, we don't believe that there's any so-called race-neutral way to create the kind of diversity that we need.
It is the threat of a return to semi-segregated higher education that has provoked a flood of 102 briefs from business, labor, even military groups, urging the court to uphold affirmative action programs. Public opinion polls show that a majority of Americans oppose affirmative action, but the American establishment, cutting across political lines, embraces it. Former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff warned, for example, that without affirmative action, the military could well return to the disastrous disciplinary problems it suffered in Vietnam, when 97% of the officer corps was white, but some 40% of the enlisted men minorities. In a different vein, 65 Fortune 500 companies tell the court that to sell to a diverse worldwide market, they need not only minority graduates, but graduates used to diversity. Graduates like Jacqueline Stevens Burke, who went to virtually all-white homogeneous schools until she entered the University of Michigan. She says her contacts with blacks, Hispanics, Jews, Muslims, and other minorities changed her forever.
It gives you a different perspective. It made me want to live around people that were not just like me.
No one disputes that goal, not Jennifer Gratz, not Barbara Gruter. The question is how to achieve it and whether race can be part of the calculus. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
The history of the case and lower court rulings are at npr.org.